On this episode, we discuss the best and worst parents in video games, and we debate the best sports game selections on the Pixel Picks Showdown. All this and more on the Pixel Parents Podcast. Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Pixel Parents Podcast, the show that discusses all things gaming from the perspective of parents. I am your host, Liam Kirkkelvin, and I am joined by none other than Scott, the Tastemaker Curry. How are you, Scott?
I am not doing bad. It's nice to see you.
I know.
After such a long period of time that's gone by.
Yeah, but it's been a journey.
Podcasting weeks don't tell a true story here, but...
No. There's been a passage of time and some events in between, unsavoury in nature.
A passage of something anyway.
Absolutely. Well, before we dive into things today, I just want to say as well, if you want to be part of the podcast at all, come say hello and share your thoughts with us at @pixel_parents on Twitter or X if you're that way inclined, or write to us at pixelparentspodcast@gmail.com. With that out the road, Scott, let's just dive straight into it. What you've been playing?
So, again, we're touching on the same as every other week, but still on the Final Fantasy VII train, Rebirth at the moment, just past Chapter 11, which, I mean, I won't delve too far into it because I know you're getting there anyway or are there now, but loving it, loving every single minute of it. There's been a point where, you know, the game has now decided that I'm not going to deal with any more of the side quests. I've got what I wanted from the side quests, which you'll find out soon enough.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty happy with just mainlining the story now. I'm loving everything about it. It's a game that, you know, I find it difficult to sort of quantify how much I want to play it, even when I'm not playing it. But even when I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about it. I'm sort of considering what's happening with the story, and nothing's really happening yet.
Yeah.
It's we're getting to the, because we're obviously know, we both know how many chapters are in the game. I think it's the same as Remake, but it's we both know that the sort of the juice of the story is coming up, and I know that from playing the OG, but
yeah.
It's something that I'm truly enjoying it, and it's one that I don't mind going back to every night.
Yeah,
there's some games that you do play that if you're going back to it every single night, it's like, fuck me, man, I can't really be bothered playing this, but I'm playing it enough now that I have to.
You have to see it through.
Like what we were talking about last week, we've bought it, we're playing it, and that's it. But with this, it's I'm 80 odd hours into it now, and It's a game that I'm quite happy to play for another 80.
Nice.
It's maybe class.
Maybe a hard replay in the horizon.
I'm thinking about it. I am. But from what I've read and from what I've heard about the hard playthrough, it's brutal.
Yeah.
The one on Remake was hard enough. But going through an open world and a hard playthrough where, you know, maybe you could dodge more fights and maybe kind of get through it that way, but there's parts in this right now that I've struggled through. You know, I'm using a lot more items and you can't use items on a hard playthrough. So it's maybe just planning ahead for that. But, you know, that's there. We've obviously got to the point now where Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2 have dropped.
Yep.
And from our initial conversations, we were both only buying Rise of the Ronin. Now we've both got that and Dragon's Dogma 2. So
we're weak men.
It's horrendous. So, you know, I'll make my way through Final Fantasy and then just see where that takes me. But I'm pretty much, you know, just a wee bit ahead of you now. I think that you were ahead of me for a brief period, but now caught up. And I think that's just because I've stopped doing the side quests.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive. It's a lot of time. I mean, for me, I'm still on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Unfortunately, my house has been struck with the cursed stomach bug that time of year. So I have just been, the game I've been playing in the house really is called the trying to clean every surface game multiple times a day. And unfortunately, it did get me in the end. And that was, that's probably not for this podcast. It was, it was not pleasant.
It was valiant. It's such a valiant effort as well.
Yeah, and it was in vain in the end. But, you know, I have been dying to get back to Remake. But what I found is, like, when I'm sick, I don't usually tend to do things I enjoy, because I don't know why. I associate it in my head, and I'm just like, it kind of kills it for me. So I've been keeping that pure. The last place I was up to, you know, I'm definitely double digits in chapters. I remember getting as far as, like, the trials for Nanaki, and I was just...
Sorry.
That's fine. Let's keep the cough in. Let's keep the cough in. Bugger it. We're human after all. But I think I was doing the trials with Nanaki, and at one point I was like, oh God, not again. Like, I can't be bothered. But by the end of it, and it culminated, I was like, all right, cool. That's kind of given me the momentum to kind of pick up where I've left off. Yeah. But one thing that's definitely, that I've been playing most in absence of kind of just sitting down in the PS5 lately, has been obviously Marvel Snap. Now, I am definitely having thoughts about this game. As you know, I have played this game every single day since it came out, right? And that's not a proud fact, right? But what I found is a diminishing return on my levels. So on ladder, and you're going to have to let me rant here.
Rant away.
But on ladder, I could hit infinite. You know, I was hitting it a good 6 months in a row or something. But the last time I managed to do it was in December last year. And I found that the meta has just really been kicking my ass. Because once you get past level 80 on it, it's pretty much meta decks. And that's typical of any card game, right? But it's pretty much meta decks. But the problem is, discard has become so popular and so powerful, and rightfully so, because it was such a rarely used art type. And now there's so many like cards that unless you had like an abundance of kind of, I hate to say paid for resources, because it's not pay to win, but you do have to kind of save up all your tokens.
You need to spend money.
If you miss them, I'm looking at you, Corvus Glaive. I'm looking at you, Proxima Midnight. If you missed like cards like this, it is hell. So decks that were once effective, of course, now don't be in. The developers have kind of shaped the meta that way so that it's not stale. They deliberately kind of push it one way or another to keep it interesting. So you kind of do have to pay attention to it if you want success out of the game. But that doesn't bode well if you're sitting and that's really all you're playing, and every trick you've got up your book isn't working. You're ready to chuck your phone out the window in a stream, burn it, you name it. It's the most frustrating. Like, see, when you get tilted on this game, my Christ, like, it ruins me. And I'm done with you. But I'm finding myself like, oh, another season started. I'll just get a season pass again. And I start the loop. It's now becoming self-harm. And I'm looking at it at the start of this season, my lowest I've ever been in over a year. And I'm like, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know, I really shouldn't be here, but I do feel like, yes, you know, it's definitely, it's obviously a skill issue, obviously, but I'm also like, I would consider myself pretty good at the game, but there just comes a point where it is just, like any card game, your luck just goes against you. You're not getting the draw of the cards, and then the locations go against you, and it's just kind of added to the sense of frustration, you know, with being around the house in this bug infested territory, you know, looking after the kids and my wife and all that as well. And it's just, oh man, I just wanted it for that little bit of that wee endorphin fix, and it's just let me down. So I found myself playing a lot of Conquest, getting the cards from that and stuff. And, you know, it's just not hitting the same. And what I find is, once I get to a certain point, I don't know if you get this in any competitive style game, where you don't want to risk your level, so you actually start to become anxious about it. And it's kind of a gambling style economy within the game. You have to bet your cubes. And I'm like, I'm just not enjoying this. I actually found myself playing it the other day, just saying to my phone, I hate you. I was just like, why am I doing this? But, you know, who knows? I will report back at the end of this season. It's my crutch.
Mm-hmm. I think we've just said that. I think it's just habit at this point. Like it's it's habitual. Like I can't. If you've got 5 minutes to sit in your phone, you know, you'll do it. And you can play Marvel Snap, you can fire out games in, what, how long would you take the longest game? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, about 3 minutes.
Aye, so, 3 minutes. I mean, I think you're hitting the point that I hit very early on in my time with it. You know, I maybe played it for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And was it Eliath? The minute that he hit, I was just like, nah.
Good big alley.
I'm fine with it now. I've had my fun. You know, I'm ready just to give this up. And I deleted the app and it's never come back. I don't miss it. I can't really be bothered playing it. And playing games on my phone isn't really something that I've done ever. You know?
Yeah.
It's not something that I ever really do. If I'm ever doing anything on it, it's maybe watching something on YouTube or whatever. So I maybe miss out on something there. But I think for you, this is just, you'll hate it, but you'll always go back. It's like that scene from The Godfather 3. Is it The Godfather 3? Where he's really old at that point.
That's when I thought I was out.
Like, aye. And just when I thought I was out, aye, I think definitely like that for you. Like you could turn this game off and never play it. But the minute a new season drops and if they drop this fancy new card, you're like, ooh, I have to go back.
I don't even want the season. The season pass cards have been pretty terrible, actually, for a good few months. They've all been 3-cost cards and they've all kind of been meh in betweens, and they've been saving the big ones for you to use your spotlight caches on. Fair enough. But I think the barrier to entry for new players is only getting higher, but that does happen with any card game.
Without a doubt, aye.
But now I'm in so deep. Because it's like that collection that I've amassed, I don't even want to think about how much money I've spent on at this point, you know. Sorry. And it's like, right, okay, I'm in there, and you know, I live in hope that hopefully I can reach the upper echelons again. But it's like, I know that all I need to do right now is just buy a couple of discard cards and then make that deck, which is so brain dead autopilot. It's kind of like, When you were playing, it would have been like destroy.
Mm-hmm.
So destroy decks, and they're still prevalent. Just you see the Deadpool, you see the Carnage, and you're like, all right, here we go. But it's effective.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter, that's the frustrating thing. Like there isn't really a lot of room for creativity or surprises anymore when you're at the meta stage. But yeah, it's for the first time I felt disappointed playing it.
Yeah,
I think it's because I really just needed something. Like to just give me a small fix, particularly through what was a pretty crappy few weeks. Yeah. But
do you think there's a place, because this is a completely separate discussion, right? And I know we've spoken about obviously what we're going to talk about for this, but do you think there's a place for like physical cards?
I mean,
do you think they could make like a physical version of Marvel Snap? You obviously don't have the reactivity of actually, you know, of the game itself and it doing certain things for you, but obviously we've both been playing Queen's Blood and Final Fantasy VII, right? And obviously people kind of clamoring for a physical version of that. But do you think there's a place, and even just for like the collection part of it, because once Marvel Snap goes, we're talking about obviously a completely separate discussion at this point, but it's like digital only.
Yeah.
You know, so once Marvel Snap goes, that collection, the money you've spent just goes. But do you think if you could find, say it's, I spotted it earlier on, you're looking at a Red Hulk card, right? Mm-hmm. Say, for example, you could get like a trading card of that, but you could play Marvel Snap with it. Do you think there's a place for that?
Yeah.
Do you think they're missing a trick? Do you think they're missing a trick in not doing something like that?
I mean, I think it's what they've tried to do. I know when they've actually got a really good GDC talk about how they designed the game. I do recommend everybody watch it because it's a good insight into how people think about how to create an engaging game. And Ben Brode, who's the lead designer on that, obviously,
he's a really loud guy.
Very loud. Very
so
loud
very on YouTube, man.
Obviously, had the success with Hearthstone and that, but they wanted to create a card battler that kind of stripped away all the fat and all the nonsense, you know. There's a lot of similarities also you can see between Hearthstone and Snap, but it can work. I think the only thing you're missing is the digital animations and stuff like that. But I mean, it's like, you know, if you look at like Magic the Gathering and stuff like that as well, that's a good example of one that's digital and also and obviously physical. And I think a lot of the communities would love to see it. And there's actually been a lot of fan-made physical versions of the game. Because all you do is shuffle your locations, and then you've got your deck, and off you go.
You just get a big Monopoly box with like the wee squares around it with your cards in it, and then you've got a big thing in the middle with all these locations and stuff, and then you could just update it as time goes on.
That's it. It absolutely could work.
Buy new seasons, £20 for a new season, you get all these cards.
Yep.
And you get the Mac Daddy cards as well, you know, you'd be right on that.
Oh, don't tempt me, Frodo.
You'd be right on that, man. But it'd be good. It's, and even just for Marvel stuff as well, do you know what I mean? That's easy money.
Oh, yeah.
And like trading cards and stuff like that, or even just like sticker packs or something, do you know what I mean? Like that's how you get your variants.
Yeah.
You can put new stickers on them or something like that, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what you're doing in the game. You get the variants, you get the foils, you know, every time you upgrade them. But it's, and that's what you go for. I'm sitting there like, you know, constantly splitting cards to try and get the gold, the Kirby splits and all that. And it's like, yeah, I could totally see myself doing that. It's terrifying. But
cool though, because then it's an actual collection at that point. Do you know what I mean? It's not the digital collection. It's not PlayStation Stars where you have statues. It's like, we both only use PlayStation Stars for the vouchers. Do you know what I mean? That's literally in for the digital credit. But
I'm waiting on them catching on to that, by the way.
100%. But it's it just feels. I mean, I literally only had the thought there where you're talking about it and mentioned the collection, but it seems an awful waste when you've obviously spent so much money on something that it just goes.
No, no.
It's like having a character in Grand Theft Auto Online, do you know what I mean? Once the servers go on that, it's gone.
I know. I thought about this the other day because there's a video I'd seen on, I don't know what it was, probably TikTok or something, and it was like Black Ops 2 montage, you know, it's 2012 and you're just home for school. And I'm like, well, I wasn't quite home from school, probably home for uni. And I was like, I think about like the maps that you buy and then the stupid, I remember the bacon gun, like a stupid skin. It was £1.50, but I was like, that's why these microtransactions work at the end of the day, don't they? Because you get mug punters like myself coming and going, ooh, shiny. But it'd be, you know, Fortnite does a really good job of this.
Yeah, but you can get statues and stuff like that of the characters and that as well. Yeah. So imagine you could personalize the character. Do you know what I mean? Like you could get, say FromSoft just decided to do, you can make your character, and if you want to spend £100, £100 British pounds, whatever equivalent that is in euros or dollars or whatever, but to then get a statue made of your character on completion of that game, do you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, people would pay that.
It'd be class.
Yeah.
But then it's a physical copy of something that you've actually got.
Yeah.
I think that... Digital is great because we don't have to leave the house and have the awkward conversations about Game Elite with people in game. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you want to pay for Game Elite? No. They can't trade in games anymore.
No.
But
they won't see me again.
Nah. It's but it's just, I think we have to get more for our money with these kind of things. And there has to be more preservation in that. I mean, we're obviously then, our hands are tied by the digital empire. Like Alan Wake 2, for example, doesn't have a physical, there's no physical game for that.
No.
And if we lost internet access, Y2K happened, Y2K 0.0.
Again.
And it happened and we lost all internet access, we would lose that.
Yep.
Couldn't play that.
Yeah, but that's the thing, like I love physical media for that. That's why I still buy, like, if it's a film I really, really like, I'll go buy the Blu-ray still. Like, I think the last one I bought was Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
And the 4K Blu-ray on that sold out briefly. But I was like, I need to buy this. I want to have something. I think the Nolan films is a good example of something. Aye. Like, I'll go out and buy that and keep it. Even though I know I've got, like, a box up the stairs. But it happened the other day. Like, I wasn't feeling very great. I went to watch Lord of the Rings trilogy. Haven't watched it in years, and instead of me faffing about to what platform it's on, I just go upstairs.
Yeah.
Get the box out, and there it is in all its glory. And I'm like, this is exactly what I needed. And it was quite the novelty pool, put the disc in, sit down. Mm-hmm. A pain in the ass when I got halfway through and I had to put disc two in because, of course, extended versions, so only way to go.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm totally with you. And it's kind of getting me thinking about, you know, like the direction where the games industry is going in terms of profiteering. Obviously, 2024 has been a shit show so far in terms of layoffs. And then obviously, a lot of these developers and publishers have expanded too quickly during COVID, and now they're retracting because they thought, well, you know, there's gold in the hills, the boom's here to stay. Unfortunately, that's what happens, and we're in a recession now, and it feels like a global recession. I'm not an economist, but hey-ho, feels that way because we're getting stiffed for something. But it brings me on to the subject, because I've wanted to talk about this, but obviously got sick, so we couldn't. Was all the chat about the PS5 Pro, because this is a really interesting one for myself as a consumer, but also just as an avid watcher of industry patter.
Yeah.
Eternal. And I look at it and I'm thinking, now there's a really good case example. It's like, right, you know, just because a company releases a product, it doesn't mean you have to buy it.
Yeah.
Right? That's the caveat here, right? But it also makes me wonder why. And I know why, because there'd be people like myself going, well, you know, that little tiny quality of life improvement you're talking about there, aye, okay, you've got me. But really, it's like that PS5, when you look at it like with the PS4, and it's like, this hasn't been anywhere near maxed out.
Nah.
With the PS4, we both upgraded to a PS4 Pro, but the original PS4 was effectively had the same as like a basic laptop under it, and it sounded like a jet engine.
That's your answer.
Yeah.
The reason why we jumped for the PlayStation 4 Pro was because it sounded like something was taking off.
Aye.
And there was points I was playing God of War where I literally couldn't hear anything. Like, I remember actually turning that game on and like, just, I can't even be bothered playing this. I actually didn't finish that game until I got the PlayStation 4 Pro. And with this, you know, I think I'll buy it because I'm stupid. I'm stupid and I'll buy it because it will see me through to the next one. But I don't need it.
No.
And I'm in the fortunate position where I'm an adult now and I have adult money where I can spend it on shite that I want, you know.
Yep.
Anything that I want to buy, I'll go and buy it. Just have to justify it to my wife and yeah. But
won it in a raffle.
I found it. I actually found this PlayStation 5 Pro in the ground somewhere, you know. It just hit me in the head and it fell.
The dog found it.
She dug it up somewhere. But I think it's just, you know, a lot of my old consoles. So when I got a PlayStation 2, I never bought my PlayStation 2. I got a PlayStation 2 from my brother, and it's because he got a brand new one.
Yeah.
So it just got handed down to me. So probably what I'll do with my PlayStation 5 is hand it down to someone in the family. So it kind of, I don't feel quite as bad about doing it at that point in time because, you know, someone else is benefiting from it.
I mean,
I think you're right. There's really no need for it because I've not played anything on that console. Maybe God of War, the Ragnarok, but even just the update for that, just watching it, it's phenomenal.
Like, yeah.
There's points in that game where, you know, it does look great. And with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, there's sometimes in it where, you know, you see the pores in the skin, like you see Barrett's face and it's like, yeah. But otherwise, you know, performance mode or graphics mode, there's always drawbacks in it. There's never a 60 frames, everything looks perfect. You've either got one or the other. And even with God of War, it was like that as well.
So that's how they're going to hook us.
Yeah.
Because this AI enhanced technology, I've not got the specs in front of me, right? So this is all just through what I can recall from the babble we've seen online. But it was just, I'm under the impression at least that they're using some type of enhancement technology there to upscale it to 4K and maintain 60 so you get the best of both. And once I read that, I was like, oh damn,
that's it, eh?
Because that's all I want, because we're both, again, fortunate we've got televisions that can support, you know, 120 hertz and stuff as well, and we're wanting to just make sure that we're getting the, I want to make sure I'm getting the most out of that.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had that TV for 4 years now, believe it or not, but it's one of those ones where the only thing that was going to stop me, I think, was if the Switch 2 had arrived this year.
Yeah.
Because Switch 2 is definitely something like I am absolutely wanting to get that day one because I'm a big man child, but also I know that that console is going to be so important for my kids as they grow up because it's going to be during that time. And you mentioned handing it down. You know, this is probably something for future us to consider, but it's like, as we get older and if there's youngins in the family, whether it's our own or if it's nieces and nephews, it's like, right, okay, I'm getting an upgrade. You take that one, be man, off you go. Yeah. And it's like, right, cool. And that's you, set. And that's kind of how I'm going to kind of figure to see it. And it's like, of course, you share everything. But it's one of those ones where it's like, right now, I'm like, oh, right, okay. I don't really need this, but I'm still probably going to hold on to my original PS5 because I've done that with all my original PlayStation. Yeah. I don't know why, I just pure hold on to them. And my wife always asks me, like, why are you bothering doing that? It's just like, it's just in case. Mm-hmm. But then I have the complete opposite attitude with the Series X.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, do you know what? There's going to be a new version coming out, probably maybe this year or next year, rumoured. But I'm like, the Series X is fine. And I'm like, they have very much sold this on, you can play your games anywhere. We are not, and the Series X will pretty much, if it can run something like Hellblade 2, cool. I don't need any more than that. And it's fine. And to be honest with you, I've kind of hardly touched it of late because
That's the same with me. If I've turned my Xbox on, it's to look at what's on Game Pass and then turn it off again.
Yeah.
I think I downloaded Persona 3. And then I've never turned it back on again. I think the last game I played on my Xbox was, I can't even remember. I was playing Lost Odyssey, which is an Xbox 360.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
So it's,
that's why I bought it, was for backwards compatibility. I used to play Metal Gear Solid 3 on it until they released the Master Collection. So there was reason to have it, but I don't know. With the Xbox, I mean, something major has to happen from them. You know what I'm like with the Xbox. I don't have very much sympathy for them because I don't enjoy Xbox first party games. I'm not a big Halo fan. I love Gears of War, so I mean, I do enjoy that. But you know,
it's past its heyday now.
Aye, but like things like Fable. I mean, like, I wouldn't play Fable. I probably wouldn't ever play Fable.
But I mean, you've described, like, that's the problem. Three like series which were, I think the time has came and went. Like Halo, I enjoyed Halo Infinite for what it was, but I'm very much like, I have to admit, it's like, do you know what, this is just a game for old dudes now. That's what it is. And
it's fine, but it's cool. Just it's not for me. I mean, we played that when it first came out and we were playing the multiplayer all the time. It was brilliant, but after you've had your time with it, it's like, well, why? There's no need to stay with it. But even the things that they're now releasing, like, you've obviously got, what, Indiana Jones. I'll play that, but I don't like the fact that it's in first person. Hate first person games. Hate them. What else is there? Help me here, because I can't remember. There's Hellblade.
Hellblade 2.
I've not played Hellblade 1. You tell me that I love it, but I've not really got any interest.
You will love that game. Like, if you find it, it's not a long game. If you find a time or a pocket of time, it's really, really cool. Play it with headphones.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really cool, unique experience. And I think, from what I remember, it came out before God of War.
Yeah.
The kind of rebooted version of it. And, you know, it was kind of doing stuff that was kind of going for. I mean, it's very different subject matters, but can't sing its praises enough.
No, and it does. Amazing. It looks phenomenal, but never played it, but it's everything that they're announcing. I'm just not. There's nothing that's really kind of sticking to me, and that might make me a PlayStation fanboy. But you know, even the third party games, don't really buy them on Xbox either.
Yeah,
like I'd always go for PlayStation 5, like Rise of the Ronin and Dragon's Dogma 2. Obviously, Rise of the Ronin, you're limited that way, but with Dragon's Dogma 2, PlayStation 5 immediately, because that's the console that, you know, it's easier. It's just there, and that's what I'll play it on.
Yeah, I mean, I've invested most of my PlayStation setup. I did the same with Dragon's Dogma 2, but it's because I've got like my DualSense Edge and stuff, and I'm like, now I've got that. It's like, I'm not going out to buy an Elite.
Yeah.
You know, like it's what it is. I've made my choice.
If Xbox want me to go ahead and buy the Xbox Series Z, you know, or Y. Forgot the alphabet for a second
The
Xbox Series
Y
should
you buy
Xbox Series Y, yeah, like, why should we do it? Oh, maybe that's a headline, by the way. Yeah, I'm going to write something about that. But it's just, there's no reason for it. But that then leads into the whole PlayStation 5 Pro, where maybe that's the reason why I do buy it. It's where I do most, if not all, of the gaming. And they're also, you know, you're talking about when it comes out.
Yep.
What's due to come out shortly after. And it's the big one, do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
So it's exactly. That's the reason why we're buying it. Like, it's, if we can play Grand Theft Auto 6 and that, you know.
6, Jesus.
And it's just, and it runs buttery smooth. That's it sold. You know what I mean? I'm going to have to play Grand Theft Auto 6 at 30 frames a second because my PlayStation 5 properly can't run it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nah. It's not going to happen.
Tell you what, they'll be hoping it doesn't get delayed. Well, that's the rumours, and we expect it based on what's done in the past. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting one, and probably one we'll probably return to, I'd imagine, as time goes on, you know. But what I want to do now is just kind of move us on to this week's kind of main topic. And I thought we'd have a little bit of fun with it this week, Scott. So really wanted to ask, who are the best and worst parents in video games? And what I mean by that is the actual characters, not people we know, and we can't see each other or ourselves as well. But who are the best and worst parents in video games? Do you want to kick us off? Any good or bad examples?
Yeah. I've actually made notes and I don't understand anything that I've put in. So I think the big one is... I toyed with it for a while, and obviously you've got the big one, Heihachi and all that. So we've just finished Tekken 8.
Okay.
He's not in it. But then you've obviously got Kazuya and everything as well, and all the history that kind of follows through them. But I was also then thinking about other games that I've played, and there's loads of parents in games. Once you actually start thinking about it, there's loads of them. You've got Joel in The Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
completely forgotten about them until I was thinking about it. And I was like, oh, aye, he is a parent in that.
Yep.
And he becomes, you know, he's not actually the stepdad, but he's the dad who stepped up, you know.
He's probably a good one to start one, actually, because, I mean, you're right, he becomes that father figure to Ellie, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. So I suppose he effectively kind of holds Ellie within that daughter type role, but I'd say he's a bad one because he holds her in that role against her will by the end of it. Spoilers for The Last of Us.
We love him though.
We do love him, and that's the thing.
Pedro Pascal is a big hunky bastard. it's just absolutely gush about The Last of Us, and I think that it also holds a special place for me because I never played it initially.
Mm-hmm.
The first time that I ever played The Last of Us was when you lived with your mum. I played it in her house.
Yep.
And it was the day after graduation.
It was awesome.
So we're absolutely rough seeing the beginning of that game, and it actually hurt my soul. And that wasn't just the hangover, it was genuinely painful to watch.
Yeah.
And as in the same vein, we've obviously mentioned God of War, but you've obviously got Kratos as well.
Kratos. He's definitely one to kind of talk about. And obviously, he's dad of two. He's got Calliope and Atreus, doesn't he? Calliope's pan-breed.
Mm-hmm.
And Atreus. I mean, we're talking about him from 2018 onwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Either way. You know, I don't think you can talk about 2018 if you've not talking about, you know.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Because I suppose, again, any of the parents we mention here, there will be full spoilers. So if we mention something, just kind of avert your ears, because I know Ragnarok is that still within the spoilery zone?
I don't think so. Is there anything really? No, it's Ragnarok. Of course.
Yeah.
Speak away.
Obviously, I've not finished it since I've finished the game when it came out. But what I remember, I just really loved that ending so much because he finally kind of felt at peace with himself. And then when you also do the DLC, he really does kind of address that kind of inner demons. But as a parent, just him having the strength to let Atreus go forth and follow his own path, and it's mm-hmm. like, damn, like, that is devastating as a parent and as fathers, kind of watching that, because that's something that you're going to have to prepare yourself for, mm-hmm. isn't it, at some point in life. But you can just see how he grows, mistakes and all.
Yeah, and brilliant. And it's brilliant playing it, you know, it's brilliant playing it, because obviously there's moments in it where you're like, it's like when you're watching a movie, you're just like, just go back. Yeah. Just go back.
Yeah.
Get off the plane, Ross. It's Rachel. Get off the plane.
Get off the plane.
There's moments in it where you're just like, God, it hits so hard. And as a parent playing it as well, it hits completely different as well. You know, it's phenomenal. We're also playing through Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You've got Barrett in there as well.
God, man. So I think this is a major thing for, like, well, in fact, there's not spoilers.
It's not spoiler, the game's been out for about 90 million years.
But that was the one that I was thinking about when we did the topics, and mm-hmm. I was like, but I was completely no idea. Mm-hmm. So you're like,
it's class, man.
He doesn't
good.
Know, but I know now, and that hit like a freight train, because it's like, again, you know, a lot of parenthood can be about sacrificing yourself for the better.
Yeah.
Betterment of the kid, regardless if that child is your own, someone else. If you're in that role, you have that responsibility. It's like, God damn it, Barrett,
it's so good.
You big so and so.
It's so good. It's brilliant. I remember when you were talking to me about it, and I was like, I can't say anything, but
it's going to
hit you. And there's a few more sort of sucker punches in there as well, but it's brilliant. A couple more to touch on for me. Was obviously, if you're going to go back to it, but you'll know from the beginning, and if you've played the demo of Final Fantasy 16,
uh-huh.
you know about Annabella Rosfield.
Yes.
And you've not played it, but what a character. What a character. She's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I think every single parent we've spoken about have been obviously fathers, but as a mother, holy God.
Tell me why. Because
she's just, it's just the hate coming from her. She and you know, everything about her, it's like watching Game of Thrones. It's like watching Cersei in Game of Thrones. It's everything is about her.
Yeah.
The family and stuff like that as well. But it's mostly just preservation of her and her family and their power and stuff as well. And how that affects Clive. It's brilliant, and it all comes to a head, and it's just great. So good.
There's nothing better when a character, you know, it's done well when you have that visceral feeling towards them, especially if it's hatred, because you know it's always much. I think it's more fun to write a villain, isn't it?
She's brilliant, and it's just there's obviously so like you've not played it, but there's so many characters in that game that deserve more time. You know, Benedicta.
Briefly had time with Benedicta.
The big rock guy, you know, the big absolute tank. Aye. He's brilliant, you know. But Annabella, it was always the whole time you're playing that game, it's just you want to get to her. You want to find out why it all went down as it did. And it's brilliant. So I'd 100% recommend going back to it. And I've got two more.
Well, before you go, because whilst you mention a mother.
Yes.
I want to add a mother to this list.
Okay.
I have a bone to pick with her. Right.
So,
I'm wanting to discuss the mum in Pokemon Red and Blue. Right. I'm wanting to discuss her, right? So, you are 11 years old, and she lets you just go out into the world to fight monsters and just kind of find your own way, going up against international corporations and try to become the best in the world. It's 11 years old. Women be crazy.
She's crazy. What is your dad not? Is that later in the series? But is your dad not like one of the gym leaders or something as well? Or is that
maybe later?
After,
I don't think it was Red and Blue from my recollection. When you're going back a million years here, but
I can't remember. But
I mean, I know in the world of Pokemon, right? It's normal, mm-hmm. right? That was the thing. Like, well, this is your time. Off you go. Like, but damn it, when you look at it in context, it's damn irresponsible. No, I'm actually surprised that not more 11-year-olds just ran out, trying catching bugs.
Just go and do it, aye.
I'm off to do it, mum. To hell with you.
Throw balls at dogs and catch them, man.
So you and who? Or me and my electric mouse here? You know, me and my fire lizard.
It's mad. No, you're absolutely right. And we teach our children not to talk to strangers. but she puts all of her trust in Professor Oak, who gives her child a little pet.
A monster. A violent monster.
it's just ridiculous. It is ridiculous, but it all works out in the end.
It does work out in the end, I suppose, yeah. And she's very proud of you and stuff, and you beat the Elite Four and you become the...
I've not played Pokemon.
Pokemon Master.
Aye.
Yeah. I remember that. Do you remember the time when you played Pokemon Gold and Silver and it just takes you into Kanto for the first time? Like, you're like a finished Johto, and then it's like, you're going to go through everything again. Oh, and then, good. Like, that challenge, and it's like, God damn. Like, that was incredible.
Aye.
But anyhow, I thought that mum had to be taken to task here today. I'm going to put her in one of the worst parents.
Aye, get her in.
Honestly. She's got a bloody cheek.
So, I was thinking about, like, stupid parents.
Uh-huh.
And the one that jumped out at me was, I had to Google his name because I'd just completely forgotten about it. And the notes that I made have it in there, and right. I wrote the wrong game in it. But it's Ethan from Heavy Rain.
Oh, God.
It's so bad. He's so bad. Everything about that game is just hilarious. Especially when you're walking through that shopping mall shooting Jason.
Christ, like,
it's
great.
It is so good. But, oh my God, what a game. I played through that again recently after unearthing my PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
I'm going to play Heavy Rain again. And I got to that point and just gave up. I was like, nah, I'm all right. I'm happy just to give this up. And going by the same name, Ethan... obviously the main character from the Resident Evil series now from 7 and 8, but the opening scenes of Resident Evil 8 have you taking care of a baby, which is an absolute nightmare. As a parent, you get given a baby.
It does trigger something, doesn't it?
It's like you look down at this child and you're like, oh my God, and then you start to see the routine, and it's like the baby goes down immediately to sleep. Best parent ever. He's the best dad on earth because he puts the baby down and it's immediately down and that's it, gone. 10 minutes later, the baby's taken away. Just stolen.
Wife is shot. Baby stolen.
But by the end, no spoilers here, but by the end, completely redeemed in the eyes of every single parent in the world. And a happy ending for all. I think. I can't even remember, but I think it is. It's such a funny funny conversation though, because there's so many that you're just like, it is mental, like, coming at it, because obviously I've spoken about prior to the wee one being born that I played Death Stranding for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
No emotional feeling towards BB at all. Yeah. I was like, this is fine, it's just a baby, and you're rocking it and you're just throwing the PlayStation controller up and down so it cries and it's absolutely hilarious. And then I played the director's cut when it came out, the updated version for the PlayStation 5, and got the platinum trophy for that again. And it's a completely different conversation.
Definitely.
The baby cries and you're like, oh my God, I need to deal with it now. Like, it's hilarious.
Once you awaken that maternal instinct within you, or paternal instinct within you, you can't put it back in.
But not really a parent. Norman Reedus is not a parent in that game.
I've got a couple of interesting ones who are parents.
Okay.
For you. One which would seem obvious one, but it's a good choice, kind of like a shade of grey, I suppose. But John Marston,
Red Dead Redemption. Think about that. Aye, did think about that.
You know, some could argue he's a good parent, right? Yeah. Just because you look at what his overarching goal is, right? And he needs to do bad things to get there. He wants to kind of redeem himself. He wants to absorb himself from all the horrors of the past and kind of do right by Abigail and Jack and just kind of make sure that all's good. But I mean, it's atonement. That's the kind of the theme of that game. But effectively by the end of it, we all know what happens. Some say he sacrificed himself. But I mean, the way I looked at it, it caught up with him.
Yeah.
And then Jack goes down the path of becoming an outlaw.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a failed in his goal. And I know you don't have control over your kids, but ultimately the environment that John was trying to avoid, he effectively engulfed his kid in that.
Yeah.
But then I thought, what about Abigail as a good example of a parent? Jack's mum. Now you go back to Red Dead Redemption 2.
Mm-hmm.
Madhood, obviously the sequels of Rico and blah blah blah. But anyhow, like, you know, John's effectively he abandons Abigail for a bit,
yeah,
and she's left to raise Jack on her own, and she's a, you know, non-wed, prostitute, illiterate, single mother, and she's doing everything she can as part of Dutch's gang to give him, you know, reading lessons and to make sure that he's brought up in the right way, and just doing all she can to give Jack a good life in mm-hmm. that extreme adversity in the Old West.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? More power to you, because it's like, she's a... These are all very flawed, you know, kind of complex characters that they've been written. It's not very, you know, black and white. But I thought the both of them as two parents.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I never finished Red Dead Redemption 1. I know what happens in the end, because obviously we all do, but... And if you don't, then obviously go and find out. But I obviously played Red Dead Redemption 2, and didn't really think about, you know, didn't really think about the Marstons, because you just want to get to the point where you meet John and you're like, this is class. Like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But 100%, I think that's a very, very cromulent point. You know, it's so good. It's it's actually really interesting when you think about it. And I didn't realize that was the backstory for Abigail. So it actually makes it very interesting.
Yeah, and it's actually, in thinking about this, it's kind of made me want to go back to Red Dead Redemption 2, which is probably the worst thing I could possibly do just now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, probably put about 70-80 hours into that game, finished it when it came out. And I've not went back, but there's barely scratch the surface. Like, we all have, like, it feels like now it's kind of getting a little bit of a renaissance, because they're discovering secrets and stuff. And I think it's because Red Dead Online's kind of phasing away.
Yeah.
And people are spending time in the single player again. But it's very interesting. And the characters in that game are just so well written, as you get from a Rockstar game, effectively. Mm-hmm. You don't have to like them. That's what I love. And speaking of characters, you don't have to like. My other one, which I thought was an interesting example, was Booker DeWitt from Bioshock Infinite.
I did make a note of it, because you don't know that till like the very end. Is that not right?
Yeah, terrible pain.
He's the worst.
In effect, he's punted his way in to pay for his gambling debts. But that sets in motion all the events of Bioshock.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that he had a traumatic past. He lost his wife during childbirth for Anna. We know it was Elizabeth. And he's tried to give her a bit of life by giving her away,
mm-hmm.
because he was living in squalor for about a year or something. But he's effectively always destined to then become a drunk or become a Baptist zealot in Comstock. And that's the pattern that keeps repeating itself. And if my memory serves me right, that's effectively why, you know, Elizabeth's and all that baptize you, try to drown you towards the end of the game. But effectively, there's always going to be a man. There's always going to be a lighthouse. So no matter what happens, they're kind of destined to always do this.
It's been so long since I've played Bioshock Infinite that it'd always be one that I would consider going back to, but... I think that there's a lot of issues in the way that it runs now and stuff as well. Like,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of sort of problems with that, because we played through Bioshock recently. Bioshock 1 and 2, Infinite, well, I didn't even think about it.
So good.
It is. It's brilliant. I remember playing it for the first time and it was class. So it might be something that I'll go back to, because it's been so long that I've played that game that playing it again, it would be like playing it for the first time ever, because it is. I remember that moment. It's like the Would You Kindly moment where everything comes together.
God.
You know, it all comes together. But it's I would 100% go back to that. And it's very interesting, because it's one of those ones where you don't really think about it. And I wouldn't have even, I made a note of Booker DeWitt, because you go onto Google and you type in parents in video games and you're like, I actually do remember him. But 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Bioshock Infinite I absolutely adored that game, and I don't know if there's a bit of a kind of a recency kind of an affection for that game that's crept in, Whereas people were like, eh, it was a bit meh. And it's like, right, okay, right, you might not like the shooting mechanics and all that, but I was like, I generally thought the game
the atmosphere, see that first Columbia. Entry into Columbia where you're actually like, you know, you go up and you're walking through and it's, is it the Beach Boys that play?
God only knows.
It's brilliant. It is, it's so good. Even just thinking about it, it's like
pure
smile on my face, because it is, it's just pure atmosphere. And that's what you get with those games, like all three of them. It's,
Am I getting Judas soon, Scott? Getting Judas soon.
Nah, I don't know. Bioshock and Space. I've seen Jeff Keighley, who obviously came out with a preview for it, so, and he says it's good.
It's got roguelike elements.
I mean, all right. I'll probably buy it. There was another one I was literally just thinking of, but I've completely forgotten about it now.
I'm surprised you've not lingered more than Hihachi and Jin. I genuinely thought.
I think there's. I don't think you'd really need to say anything about it. I could sit here for hours waxing lyrical on them because there's a lot to talk about. But there is a YouTube video on it about the insane lore of Tekken. And I don't 100% recommend anyone watch it. It is literally called that. Can't remember who makes it, but it is great. Yeah. It's so good, and it tells you everything you need to know about them. And there's more to the family than you actually think, but you've obviously now got, you know, Reyna in Tekken 8, who we don't know who she is. Is she Hihachi's daughter? Is she someone else? Is she someone else? but it's great. Oh, who was the other one I was thinking of? Can't mind.
Oh, well. Well, do you know what? If you remember by the end...
It will come back to me.
But what we should do is we should move on to week 4 of the Pixel Parents Showdown. The podcast world's probably best showdown, where we just both pick a game and we debate like gentlemen which should feature best on top of that list that we've got there. Now, from what I gather, because it's been a while since we did the last one, the last one was on Superhero, and it was Batman Arkham Asylum that came out on top. Mm-hmm. So that would have been myself. So I will do the gentlemanly thing and hand it over to you. And this week we are going to be picking what we think is the best sports game to appear on that. So Scott, let me have it. What have
you
got?
You have it. So I toyed and I thought about games that I've played in my past, and I thought, what are the games that I played back in the day that I could throw on this list? You've got obviously International Superstar Soccer. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, you've got your NFL Streets, your NBA Streets.
Now you're talking.
There was also a little game. So I Googled it because I couldn't even remember its name.
Uh-huh.
So I had to Google Mexican luchador footballer. Right? Weird results.
Right.
But then I remembered who made it. And I thought, oh my God, I played that game more than I've played anything else in my whole life. Right. Came out in 2002. Not a massive game by any means. It was called Sega Soccer Slam.
Right.
It was a 3-on-3 game. So it was like Mario Superstar Strikers before Mario Strikers, basically.
Yeah.
But it had so many stereotypical characters. There was a Scottish player wearing a kilt, like bagpipes and all sorts. There was a Mexican team, so there was a team of like kind of Latina team. There was a massive hulking luchador in it. oh my God, it was brilliant.
You know, I think we might have played this, and this might have been courtesy of our producer, but
potentially. It's so good. You've got these massive finishing moves for your goals, like overhead kicks and stuff. I played that game to death because you would go through it. You could make your team, you'd unlock new teams and stuff. It was like your old fighting games where you'd unlock a character and stuff like that, but I'm not going with that. I'm going to go safe this week because I feel like I always go for a really obscure...
I encourage this.
An obscure, stupid suggestion.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, what is a game that we've both potentially played that if the whole goal of this is that this is a collection of games that we pass on to our children that they could go and play and enjoy...
Yep.
And potentially play for hours.
Uh-huh.
And
I know what you're going to say here.
And it is a game that is for a console that needs more love. It is Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games.
Oh, right, okay. I was not expecting that. Okay.
Right. So it has got everything.
Yep.
It has got everything. It's got Mario. It's got Sonic.
Yep.
Right? So two of the biggest hitters in video games, full stop. It's at the Olympic Games. But no, it's just even, it's so fun to play.
Yeah.
And it's just daft wee things like going for world records in every single event. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
It came out at a time where, you know, it needed something like that. The Wii obviously had Wii Sports and stuff, but as soon as that came out, it completely changed.
Changed the game.
It changed the game, aye. And like, I used to play Olympic games, like proper Olympic games on like the PlayStation or something like that.
Yeah.
And you would play it and you'd be like, oh, shit. Like, it's good, but it's like, you play it once, you've played them all. But then you could do the same thing, but as Wario.
Yeah.
It's like, let's swim 100, let's swim 100 meter freestyle as Wario.
That is an incentive.
Like, yeah. That's the incentive. It's brilliant. And there's room for error. You could do it perfectly. There's a Facebook page that I follow at the moment, and it's a guy who he does challenges playing the Wii, and he's constantly doing stuff on this, and that's the reason why it came in my head. So I'm thinking it's brilliant. And it's a game that, see if I could source a Wii and play it with the little one now, she would love it.
Yeah.
She's 4 and she wouldn't have to do much with it. She could just throw the controller up and down. Even your wee ones could do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, we could all do it. We could all, every single person should buy a Wii, bring the Wii back and do it. But I thought that's the one. It's so easy to make a statement for, because it is brilliant. It is genuinely so good.
Okay. That's a good pick. It's a good pick. You know, I've got three ones here to go through. You know, I went through first my heart, which was PES 5, Pro Evolution Soccer 5 to the uninitiated. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, football games.
Who was in the front of the?
John Terry and Thierry Henry.
So it was, aye.
So it was one good footballer, wasn't it? Thierry Henry. so you want to talk about countless hours? I mean,
yes.
I played that game to death. I mean, this was something that I would play religiously. And it was back when, you know, I'm a young teenager, and I'm just like, yep, I'm just going to just plow all my life into this. And the gameplay in that was arcade perfection.
Yeah.
But I thought, because I really actually couldn't decide between that and PES 2016, which is another fantastic game, changed the game. I did consider Wii Sports because I thought, you know, that this is the quintessential, like, pick up and play game, but I thought there's just not enough in it for me, because I'm like, really? Bowling?
Yeah.
Tennis? But, kind of get bored, but it's good.
If my memory serves me correct, it is like, I'm going to be, it's not a bold statement, but it's within the top 10 of best-selling games of all time.
Yes, because it's
like,
to the
I think, Wii. I think it's like number 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant. It's so good.
Yeah.
I make a statement for it. Pick that.
Well,
but then pick Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. What?
But I thought I would maybe go for the obscure one this week.
Okay.
But it's not obscure. Okay. It's also, I think, in one of the highest rated games of all time. Might be, I don't think it's in the best selling, but it's definitely one of the highest rated games of all time. And that is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
Ah, right, okay.
And I thought, if there was ever a game that I was going to hand over to the kids just to give them a window into it from a sports perspective, because skateboarding is an Olympic sport now, I thought, what else but that? Something to totally encapsulate that feeling of being in the 90s and just playing something to death. The arcade pick-up and play nature of that game, you know, and it was a phenomenon, an absolute phenomenon of a game, a juggernaut, something that kind of launched a genre that was kind of all to its own within the sports genre, I suppose, and it was something that became must-play. You know, it really was. It was like Tony Hawk's was something that you would play all the time. We all have such an affinity for that soundtrack, but it was the gameplay. You know, 2 minutes, try and get all your goals done within that, collect skate, get the secret tapes, try and do like all these other bits and bobs around it, you know what. And I remember it got me good when they did the remake of it.
That's what I was just about to say. Would it be OG or would you go for the remake?
I'd go for OG because I think that still had just a little bit more of an arcade spirit, but the remake was was really damn good.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, this list, if we just pretend we had every console hooked up to the telly ready to go, you know, that's basically it. Because let's face it, you know, you could emulate half this stuff.
Yeah.
Not that we advocate emulation on this podcast.
Advocate it. There's space for this it. I think it's the same. It's the same conversation that we were having earlier on about digital and physical. Yeah. Physical. You know, there's a place for it.
Well, true, but yeah, I think, you know, for me, I have to go with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 just because I didn't want to be basic with a football game, and I just thought, I just love it so damn much. Like, yeah. There's something about it that makes me smile. And to be honest with you, I could have picked 3 or 4 as well. A lot of people will pick Tony Hawk's Underground or the third 2, and I'm like, nah, like, they just don't do it for me. Like, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 all day long for me. But this is a question. Which do we think is the better game? Or not even that. What do we think deserves a place on this list? Between two,
I think it's the toughest one that we've had so far.
It's tough,
genuinely, because I have a lot of love for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. I really do. I have a lot of love for it, but it's also not Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, I can count. You know, I can't even count the hours that I played Tony Hawk's in my fingers, because I genuinely played the living hell out of it.
Yep,
and it would just be, even just with cheats on, you know, just firing through the air. It was brilliant. You've got the unlockable characters and stuff as well.
Do you remember the trick you used to do, like, when you were, like, doing a trick in Half Pipe with Spider-Man, you would web it back to him? Like,
yeah.
Kick it away and web it back. Uh-huh. Like, oh, my God.
It's brilliant. It is brilliant. And I'm glad you've not gone for the remake, because I enjoyed the remake.
Mm-hmm.
I did, but there was also part of it that just didn't feel, you know, it lost a lot of its heart when it was remade. Yeah. There's something very, you know, grungy, and, like, there's something really cool about playing it, and it looks the way it looks back in the day. I think it's just, you know, rose-tinted glasses back then, but everything, I could imagine that game in my head right now, and it looks perfect.
And you can hear it.
You can hear it, you know, soundtrack. The music and stuff as well, but it wasn't the same in the remake. I think it lost a lot of that.
It didn't have the same, like, unlockables, didn't have the same sheen, mm-hmm. It didn't have the same soundtrack. A lot of it was kind of kiboshed, but just due to rights and stuff.
But I think it also helps that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 came out at a time where, you know, that was the world that we were living in then. You know, we were all listening to bring back those days, man. Like,
it's such a time capsule of a game. Uh-huh. But, you know, in favour of Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, you've got two of the most recognisable mascots, especially for children, but mm-hmm. for everybody of all time, at the most recognisable sporting event of all time. So, and, it, you know, the case has been made there, and I think it's a strong case, because it's like, it's a sports game. It has lots of classic sports in there that's pick up and play and very engaging. And if it, you know, if it was strictly in the context of it needed to be kid friendly,
yeah,
I think it would absolutely take the biscuit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think this is actually a really tough one. Because I'm like, but I'm thinking, you know, if it comes down to which one I think is the better game, I do think it's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
It's Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. It's ultimately, if the topic is sports game,
mm-hmm.
that's many sports games. You could have a Mario and Sonic racing game where it's just them running and that's it. But you've also got swimming.
Yep.
You've also got the pole vault. You've got all these Olympic events. And I'm pretty sure they made at the Winter Olympics as well. They've made other Olympic event-based Sonic and Mario games. But it also, right, it also then paved the way for other collaboration within that same sphere, you know, Sonic's in Smash.
Yep.
It's I don't see how you couldn't. It's if you were to walk out to the kids right now and say, here's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, or here's Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, and show them the box art for both.
Yeah.
Tell me they wouldn't pick Mario and Sonic.
You're absolutely right. It wouldn't even be a contest.
Now, and for us, If you show me those games, I'd probably still pick Mario and Sonic because I think it'd be hilarious for a night to play it. But it is just a game that you would play for a night and potentially just put it down, you know, at this age. But it'd be hilarious fun at 32 years old. I know you're hitting 40 soon. So it's definitely something that I think it would be hilarious. But I think that for me, I've not lost my love for it since I first played it. I think that the remake for Tony Hawk's has you know, soured me on it a wee bit. And that's the reason why I would go for it. But I completely, completely understand why anyone else would maybe say Tony Hawk's is the one to go for, because...
Yeah, I think...
It's a product of its time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think there might be some parents listening just now, hopefully, that might just probably be like, yeah, we've got the nostalgia for, you know, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. But I think you're absolutely right. I think you have convinced me. I think you have debated well, good stuff. And I think with that in mind, that we add Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games as this week's winner.
Rightly deserves.
Rightly deserves, yeah. I think, you know, it's got so many sports within one. It has the, you know, iconic mascots, the most iconic sports event in human history. Yeah, I think, you know, going on that, I think if I was going to put Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 on that above that, it would only really satiate my snobbery.
It's if you think about it this way, that Sonic and Mario at the Olympic Games is a family game.
Yeah.
So you could play that with the kids, whereas Tony Hawk's, it's pass the controller.
Pass the controller or just sit in your Todd.
Aye.
And do it.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a very, very good one. Very good case put forward. And yeah, I think it sits proudly as our best sports game on the Pixel Picks showdown list. So congratulations to Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. You've finally won something. No, but with that, that's us reached an end of this week's podcast already, Scott. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it.
That has absolutely flown in. But listen, we want to thank everybody who's listening for tuning in. And of course, you can tell people, of course, where to find us, Scott. Where can they find you on the Twitters and so forth?
At Llamaman91, year I was born, obviously, year of the, I don't know, whatever it is, but...
The Doug.
The year of the Doug. Aye, but... Llamaman91 on your favourite social media platform. And aye, while you're in.
Excellent. And of course, you can find myself on Twitter at Carmelite. That's with the Y. You can figure out the spelling yourself. I'm not going to do that on this. And of course, I want to give a special shout out to our producer and of course, the music man himself, Sean Murray. That wonderful theme that you've heard at the start of the podcast was composed none other by himself. And he does an excellent job in making sure that our chocolate tones are always at their most best. So thanks, Sean, for that. Shout out to yourself. And of course, listeners, you can catch us on all your major podcast platforms, Spotify, Amazon, Google, you name it. And just follow us as well. Give us a wee follow on Twitter or X, if you're that way inclined, at @Pixel_parents. And of course, write to us, just send us your thoughts. What's it like being a gamer parent at pixelparentspodcast@gmail.com. But anyhow, I have been Liam.
I have also not been Liam, I've been Scott. Just also say, if you have any choices for the Pixel Parents Showdown as well, if you want to fire over your suggestions or even suggestions on games that we should be considering or options that we should be considering, give us a shout.
Yeah, be lovely to hear from you. But once again, thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye. Play Alan Wake 2.